there, welcome to Blockhead, the podcast where cartoonists talk comics and just about everything else. My name is Jeff Grogan, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so in a series of conversations with comics creators about their lives, their work, and comics. So sit back and enjoy. Hey there, Blockhead listeners. Welcome to our bookend episode of Gene Cannenberg's visit to Blockhead to talk about the comics world at Northwestern University and his work as research assistant, media and research assistant at Northwestern University in the Herskovitz Library of African Studies. He talks about that in part one. In this part of our discussion, he focuses in on his work in making books, his work as an artist, how a course in bookmaking changed his life, or bookbinding rather, because he doesn't take bets, but how that changed his life and how it led to this wonderful new volume called Here Comes Charlie Brown, a Peanuts pop-up book from Abrams, out, as a matter of fact, I believe it's today, March 26th. So be looking for that. This is how it all came to be. So you want to know more about this book, you're thinking about buying it, this is going to tell you. This will sell it to you, I'm telling you. So this is a really interesting discussion because it really does, you know, it talks about some really fundamental aspects of bookbinding and pop-up books, so which I think is fascinating. Really interesting trying to figure out how to make a pop-up book. Because, you know, we think about books as art objects. A pop-up book really exploits that, right? It really brings it to the fore, the idea of a book as object. And Gene is really not only, you know, an expert at making them, he's also an aficionado, a fan of pop-up books, and introduces all of us, I think, to a wonderful world of pop-up books that you may, like myself, may not have even been aware of. So this is fun. This is great. I really enjoyed this discussion with Gene. I learned so much listening to him talk about his work, both at Northwestern and on the Peanuts book. And I really hope that you enjoy this episode and that you head right over wherever you buy your books and pick up Here Comes Charlie Brown from Abrams, a Peanuts pop-up book. It is available, I believe, wherever good books are sold. And you can find it on Abrams' website. You can find it at Amazon. You can find it at Barnes & Noble. You can find it probably at your local bookstore, your local independent bookstore. Wherever you buy your books, look for Here Comes Charlie Brown, a Peanuts pop-up book created by Gene Cannenberg. So, yeah, I love my copy. I'm so happy I've got it, and I know you'll enjoy yours, too. It's a wonderful addition to any Peanuts collection. So let's get to it. Without further ado, Gene Cannenberg talks Peanuts. I'll see you on the other end.
But at this point, I've got so many other interests that that book will never happen.
Well, yeah, and among those is making comics of your own.
Yeah, that happened because when I moved here to this job, I didn't really know anybody at first, and I made a New Year's resolution. I was at a party, and somebody said, what's your New Year's resolution? And I said, I don't make them because I never keep them, but I really wish I drew more. Mm-hmm. And I went home, and that day I drew a really, really sloppy comic that was abstract, because I had been experimenting a little bit with that the year before. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I should do one of these every day, which was dumb because I never follow through on anything. But I put it on Facebook.
Right.
And people said, oh, that's kind of cool. You should do more of those. And if I would not have done that and had the dopamine hit of the likes,
sure, yeah,
I would have stopped within 3 or 4 days. But that's what kept me going. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the year, things looked very different than that first one. That first one was a bunch of unrelated pen strokes, brush pen strokes,
sure,
that just vaguely looked like panels. But by the end of the year, I was really thinking about layout and balance and stuff like this in ways that I hadn't at the very first. Because after about a week, I was like, you know what? You studied comics for 20 years. Why don't you start thinking about applying all that stuff that you thought about in all these other cartoonists and try to do some of that stuff yourself rather than just draw boxes and fiddle around?
Had you always drawn?
I drew a lot when I was a little kid, but I didn't follow through on it much after like middle school. My brother's 3 years younger than me, and he became a much better artist than I was very quickly. It kind of became clear that I was never going to be as good as he was, especially because he was younger and already like I could, because I like taught him perspective early on, and then he just took off and he was crazy. And I was like, well, I like science. Turned out that I turned when I got to college, I realized that what I love is reading about science.
Oh, I see.
I can't do science. I can read, I love reading about science, but I don't do science really well.
I understand. Yeah.
So
Yeah. Well,
that's when the English major came in.
and did your brother become an artist?
He became an artist. He had his BA in drawing and painting, and he got an MFA, and I was got a PhD in sound studies.
Oh, fascinating. Huh, interesting. All it's all art, but one thing
Yeah.
leads to another sometimes.
Yeah.
So did you find that intimidating that he was doing so well and eclipsing you in that regard?
A little bit, but also I had my own stuff. I mean, I was thinky. I was always really good in school until college. Losing a scholarship will change your idea of yourself real quickly.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, sure. Wow. That's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, college, a lot of times we're, you think about it. I mean, you teach, I teach. Young people are still young people, right? And you make
Yeah.
a lot of mistakes, and there's a lot of, you get your priorities all messed up. I had a kid in for registration the other day, and he really wants to be, to go into digital art. He really wants to focus on digital art and digital practice and all that kind of stuff. It's great, wonderful. There's a great class on Friday, that's going to expand your territory. It's more than just a beginning class. It's a intermediate level class, and it starts delving into all different, aspects, audio, visual, et cetera, of digital art. Sounds like it would be perfect for you. Fridays, I don't want to go Fridays, and it's like,
Oh God, oh.
you know what I mean? It's like, no, come on. You're paying for the class, first of all, right? You're paying to be educated. You can hang
Yeah.
out with your friends. You could take Monday off, right? I mean, it's you got Saturday and
Yeah.
Sunday. It's a morning class, for gosh sakes. You'll have the whole afternoon, but priorities are different when you're 19 and
Yeah.
20, so things
Yeah.
happen,
Well,
right?
classes are rough. I mean, one of my biggest challenges was I went back to school while I was s since I've been working. I went back to school for my library degree.
I see. Okay.
And that was a hard thing to do after getting a PhD in teaching and then deciding that teaching wasn't for me, and then working in the library for a while. I was like, can I really do this? Can I really go back to being a student again?
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a hard thing. But what I realized was that I could do it slowly. The library at the time was doing tuition remission as long as it was related to your job. So a library degree,
Right.
as long as I was getting good enough grades, they would repay me at after every
Oh,
semester.
fantastic. That's great.
So it was free. And so I realized all those courses that I always wanted to take but never did because I was trying to be the right kind of student, now I'm going to be the me kind of student.
Good for you. Yeah.
So I'm going to take Introduction to Artist Books. I'm going to take Print History. I'm
Right.
going to take, I took a copyright class. I took a bunch of different things. I took a lot of print history kind of stuff. Because I was really, really interested in I've really become interested in books as objects
Yes.
and just print history itself. And the most important class that I took was book introduction to bookbinding.
Yeah.
It was all the class was all on the whole program was online. So doing bookbinding online is kind of an interesting
Yeah.
kind of interesting
Yeah.
thing. He the every he pre-recorded all the
Sure.
lectures and things like this. And then you work on the books during the week. You take pictures of them and send them to him. And then twice during the semester, you box everything up and send it to him.
Wow. Okay.
And and that's what basically changed my life.
Sure, it sounded, I mean, obviously we have, this as
Yeah,
a
the book would not exist without that class.
Yeah,
That's what
incredible.
really did it for me.
So, what was it that got you interested in that? Because, I love books as objects too. I guess this is one of the wonderful things about I guess I would say in a lot of ways the last 30 years is kind of like a renaissance in the printing of comics and the, what do we call it? I don't know. It's the archiving of comics in these beautiful books that comics are receiving this treatment now that they never received when you and I were kids. We never thought this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And Fantagraphics and Drawn and Quarterly and people like that, who have the wherewithal and the budget, whatever, or sometimes scrounge the budget wherever they get it. But book designers who came together to make these beautiful volumes that are really unaffordable to anybody but a library, really, a lot of times. But
Sometimes, yeah.
incredible, just incredible, beautiful works of art that not only that show off the comics to, how they need to be seen, how they should be, the kind of, it's given the kind of respect that they deserve and never
Yeah.
received when we were growing up. And so, we have these wonderful collections and beautiful art objects, really. Is that what spurred your interest in the idea of the book as an object, or was it other things as well?
It was other things as well. Just I was a medievalist
Oh,
also,
my gosh. Okay.
and
Yeah.
so
Sure.
medieval manuscripts, got really into those for a while. My dissertation was going to be on illuminated medieval manuscripts
Oh,
for a while,
fantastic. Yeah, beautiful.
because and I realized I was basically trying to write a comics dissertation without writing a comics dissertation, and
Where it
eventually
all goes
I
back to
moved over.
comics. Yeah.
Yeah, it
Yeah.
kind of does,
You
but
sound so fatalistic.
yeah. Well, it's it 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 it, it all it all it all comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like again, and Peanuts is like one of the first things that I remember reading.
Sure.
I
Yeah.
mean, because re-reading in the newspaper, before I was reading comic books, I was reading comic strips, because of that those ancient things called newspapers.
Yeah, right. Long
And then
ago.
like, yeah, and then like the Scholastic Book News that you would
Oh.
get every month.
Yeah.
And my brother would always buy the Peanuts collections. He bought every single one of those.
You mean the Fawcett books or
The Fawcett,
Peanuts
yeah, the Fawcett
Treasury or
ones. Yeah.
yeah.
So
Those floated around my neighborhood.
they just floated between my brother and me constantly.
Yeah.
I just read the hell out of those things over and over.
Well, they always ended up one way or another in my house and those Fawcett paperbacks, but I don't remember ever buying one because I was too young. I was the oldest in my family and I was still too young in the 60s to buy those books for myself. My mother bought me other, Peanuts Treasury and Peanuts Classics and things like that, but because she was a fan, albeit it was kind of like the kind of thing she kept to herself, but she was always making references like she did, as the 80s wore on and Schultz began focusing on Marcy and Peppermint Patty, she would say things like, "You're weird, sir," and stuff like that, and I never made the connection
Nice.
at the time, but later on, I realized, and so all these books came from my mom. But what was really cool in my neighborhood in the 60s was there would be like books like that would travel through the neighborhood. Like one kid would have them and they'd pass them along to another kid and pass them along to another kid. And so you didn't own it in a sense. It just came from somebody's brother, and then went to somebody else. So we all kind of shared them. But Peanuts was those little paperbacks which are reviled now by people who design, who design books, nevertheless made a big impact, I think, on all of us.
I think somewhere back in storage in back in Albany, New York still. I think I've still got all my brother's Scholastic Peanuts books.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm filling in. I've got almost all of the original faucets now.
Great.
Yeah, and I managed to get, I'm staring at it right now, the full Fantagraphics complete Peanuts
Me too.
and the Sundays, the Peanuts every Sunday also,
Yeah, I don't
which
have all of those. I have them up to for the end of the 70s, I think.
yeah, those I what I realized about reading the Sunday books is that you can see, especially like the first one, especially the first one or two volumes, you can see the progression of his art and his ideas so much more quickly.
Yes, that's probably true. Yeah, I would think so.
It was just kind of a fascinating to see it that way.
Yeah, that is
Yeah. And
interesting.
also just the fact that all those the original paperbacks were not, they never published everything, and they kind of took things from several years and threw them all together.
Yeah.
So the Fantagraphics books were interesting to finally see everything all at once, or to not see everything all at once, but see everything in order finally. So you can really
Yeah.
see the different progressions and the dead ends and stuff like that,
Yeah.
which kind of got left out. Because like that this very first strip was never in the original Peanuts books.
No. Pardon me while I let my cat out of the There you go, Bets.
Cats will do that.
Yeah. She was here for a while. I think she got overheated or something. Yeah. So she had to leave, or maybe she got hungry. I don't know. That's the only thing that keeps that door closed. It's this little piece of string. This is a very high tech operation. So,
Oh
anyway, so yeah, I think that's one of the wonderful things. You know, that whole endeavor from Fantagraphics, I think, has done such a service, to people who love Charles Schulz and to revere his work. And I mean, it was never had never been done before, and it's just an incredible project. And as a librarian, you must really appreciate
Oh
that.
God. Yeah. No,
The
it's my
endeavors,
yeah. It doesn't help my own library because it takes up so much damn space,
Oh, I love it.
but
I have it on my bookshelf too, and I have, the complete. As a matter of fact, I thought we'd end up talking about Peanuts, so I brought a couple of
yeah.
those up. But I have the whole collection also, which is my pride and joy, really, of my collection. You've seen my little animated film, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't have done it without these books. I mean, I couldn't have, because the album that I based it on, which you probably remember with Kay Ballard and Arthur Siegel, it again, that was another one of those things in the neighborhood when I was a kid. I always found it as a kid a really strange record because it had all these weird sounds in it, but it stayed with me. And so anyway, going through that album, listening to it, which is all from Lucy's point of view because Kay Ballard was the star, there was no way to, I never would have been able to find the strips that the images that were referenced without Fantagraphics' complete collection. Otherwise,
God
because some of
bless
them were,
the index.
yeah, right? I know, man. It's fantastic because otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to do it. So, because a lot of those
Yeah.
strips were obscure. So,
Yeah, and help me figure out when Shermie and when Patty finally left the strip too,
Yeah.
because not that it wound up in the because there's an essay in the back of the book also, and I don't think I wound up actually putting in the end dates for those characters, but I wanted to know how long they actually stuck around,
Yeah.
because they don't last forever.
No. There's Patty and Violet. And do both of them leave at the same time, Patty and Violet?
Patty Shermie leaves first.
Yeah.
I think Patty sticks around a little longer. I think Patty and Peppermint Patty overlap just a tiny bit, but you do really don't need two Patties.
Yeah, Peppermint Patty comes along in what, 67 or 68, maybe earlier.
I think a little earlier than that. Yeah, it's I don't have an encyclopedic memory on I've never been good with dates, but
oh, come on, Gene. Me neither. I don't either. I suppose if you know, it's easy to find out if we Google it. But yeah, Patty and Vi. It's interesting to think about. Peppermint Patty is a very distinct character unto herself. Very, you know, her personality is right from the start. It's unique. And Patty, the original Patty, and Violet are kind of weaker versions of Lucy in a way. You know,
Yeah.
they're.
Yeah, and Shermie also is just kind of there.
Yeah, he's just kind of there, you know. As he said, I'm always a shepherd, right? Is what he says in the Christmas special. I'm showing off my Peanuts nerdness now. Yeah, no, Shermie, but I always liked Shermie, and I guess it was because Shermie seemed like a little bit older than Charlie Brown, and he was never quite as cruel as some of the other kids were. He is in that first strip, but it's funny later on. Shermie's not such a bad guy. He's not Linus, but he's not such a bad guy, you know.
Yeah.
In Peanuts, the girls tend to be, in at least in the first portion of the strip, the female characters tend to be the most dismissive, the most cruel to Charlie Brown.
Yeah, it's in the beginning, it's more, it seems like more he's going for the gag rather
Yes.
than the personalities so
Yes.
much.
Yeah.
And it's more the setup for the gag, but that turns pretty quickly. But
Yeah.
at first, it's because Charlie Brown gives as good as he gets, I think,
What, in
for a
those first couple of
while.
years? Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
You point that out in the essay in the back of the book here. But you know, looking at this, who starts off a comic strip introducing the main character, and then somebody says they hate him? I mean, who starts off a comic strip that way?
Yeah, and also like who starts off a character comic strip with your main character? Panel one, he's super tiny.
Yeah, he's.
Panel two, okay, he's big.
Yep.
And then he disappears.
Yeah.
He just well he's only in half of the first strip.
Yeah, I
He's
know.
only in half the first strip. But it makes the gag work.
Yeah, of course.
If he was there in three panels, the gag doesn't work nearly as well. You need that beat.
Yes, you do. You do.
You need that third beat.
Well, now, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that. You talk about the beat, and I always felt I liked Peanuts best when there were four beats, four panels. I think Schultz had a real knack for setting up the four panel gag. I never enjoyed the three panel gags as much. Now, that's, of course, three panels became later when strips became even smaller in the newspaper, so he was forced to do that. I always felt like it was slightly, and I know I'm venturing into critical territory here, and I hate to do that, because I revere everything he did. But that being said, I always felt he had such a natural feeling for that 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, there's a musicality to it. There's a
Oh,
musicality to
yeah.
telling a joke, you know. And Schultz
Yeah.
had this, you know, his timing was naturally attuned to the 4-4 beat kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, although I've noticed reading some of the later ones that he does modify the way his jokes work for the threes too.
Sure, you have to.
He modifies that, but the reason again that this book exists is because I made this other one
Oh, I see that.
after the book after the class that I took, because I for my final project was I made a Steve Ditko homage. My final
Oh.
my final project was a Steve Ditko book.
Okay, Gene, now I've got to see this. Okay. All
Okay.
right. Can you want to open them up, man? I want to
Yeah,
see these.
sure. Okay, so what I wanted to do was I wanted to
I
do an
love that.
homage to Steve Ditko, but I wanted to do Steve Ditko's environments. I wanted to look at just the mystical environments.
I love it.
So
I
we've got
love it.
this little
Well,
book
that
here.
cover, I was just going to say, before you even open up the book, that anybody who knows Ditko knows, you know, as soon as you see that, you know it's Ditko. And
Yeah.
his there's something about his line, the way it tapers and curves, you know, it's so indicative of Ditko's sensibility. I mean, it's just Ditko, right? And you can tell right from,
Yeah.
and I love that graphic, man. That's beautiful. It's
Well, thank
great.
you.
Yeah.
Thank
So
you.
simple,
Yeah.
but so, evocative.
The way these covers work, it's a piece of cardboard. It's a piece of board wrapped this way, and then another one wrapped this way. And I realized, well, if I cut through on the one that wraps to the top, it shows the other one on the bottom, so I can do that. So what I did was I took.
Oh, look at this. Oh, I love it. I gotta have this. This is great. Oh my
And
gosh. I'm like, in ecstasy right now. This is fantastic.
that
Oh
and that
man. Wow.
and what I had to teach myself how to do was to make these pop-up panel these pop-up
They're like,
the caption boxes.
yeah, how do you, I mean, I can't even imagine how this is done. Oh, I see. Okay. So each, okay. Wow.
So each one of these is three. This
Three.
is what's known as it's what's known as a carousel book,
Okay.
basically. But I added the pop-ups. I had to get a book out of the library to teach me how to make pop-ups,
Oh my gosh.
because we didn't learn how to make pop-ups in the class.
No, you learn. So, wow, that's,
So,
oh, look at
and then
this.
the whole book does this.
Wow, man.
And basically, what I had to do,
Incredible.
the last two panels are one panel that I had to cut in half.
I see.
To do that, but so I did that, and like everything is like the things have to be the layers have to be hand sewn together
Oh,
and things like
interesting.
this, because like what that's based on is a book like this, which is
Okay.
this is what it would look like with no color or anything like that. It's just three different layers as you go through.
Oh,
So
fantastic.
that was my final project. And I was like, and he liked that. He liked that a lot. He liked that.
Sure.
He liked that in the best possible way. Put it
You
that
got
way.
an A.
So I got an A plus.
Well, good for you, man. That's
So
excellent.
I was, and like
Well worth.
the captions, because I was still doing my other comics at the time, where I was doing AC McText, where I was writing things that look like text but don't actually mean anything.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted it to look
I've
kind of
always loved
like
stuff like that.
I wanted this book to look kind of like that. So what I did was I found in an earlier issue a panel where Doctor Strange is reading a mystic scroll, and the mystic scroll has all these glyphs on it. So I took that scroll, I took all those glyphs, I scanned them all, and then I made these two quick. I made these two quick caption boxes, and then I just through these glyphs on all of them. And
Oh,
then for the last one, I kind of made the red glyphs arc kind of like the arc down there. The they kind of do that. That was my like that's what was my arty thing. But then after I made that, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And then I had this idea. The first peanut strip would work perfectly. Actually, any peanut strip up through what 1986 or 83 would work, because the panels are all the same size.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Because the only way these books work is if everything is the same size. So then I made this one. I made this just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
So I did.
Ah, cool. I
And what I was able to do with this one that I couldn't do with that one because I didn't have the time. What I really wanted to do with that, with the Ditko one, was to get rid of everything under each layer that was in the top layer. I wanted to get rid of the stuff. I didn't do that on that one. It was too much work. But for this one, I was able to do it. So I could just do that. So it's basically the same thing.
Yes, great. Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah.
And this one also opens up.
Yeah, nice.
And for both of those, I put the videos online, and for they kind of went mini viral, which for me is like 5,000 views.
Oh, wow, that's great though. Yeah.
But yeah, it was like, wow. The Daily Cartoonist picked up the Charlie Brown one and said, Peanuts needs to publish this. And so then I screen capped that. A friend of mine told me about it. I screen capped that. And then I posted that. And then within 2 days, I had two publishers contact me.
Oh my gosh.
It was nuts. Excuse me.
Fantastic. That's so cool. What a great story.
And one of them, Abrams, before they contacted me, they contacted Peanuts Worldwide. And Peanuts Worldwide said, yeah, we want to do it with you, Abrams. So that's how the book happened. But again, the reason why the first one happened was because the idea came in my head, and the only way it would get out of my head was through my hands.
Sure. Yeah, that's the
It
way
was
it
one of those
works.
things.
Yeah.
It was one of those things that, and so this is a complete accident. It's a
It's what a
complete
happy accident,
accident.
though.
It's
So,
a happy accident. Yeah.
it's a beautiful accident. I absolutely love it.
I got really lucky. The book designer, Sean Dahl, she did this amazing job because, again, it's got this extra
Yeah,
hardcover.
I love it. Yep. And we have this little interior. Yeah.
So it's got three hardcovers. So, and that means that it has a regular spine, and then it's got the Charlie Brown spine.
Yep.
That's gorgeous. And again, I can take no credit for how cool the book looks on the outside. Because
That was somebody else.
Chip Kidd designed the cover. Sean
Oh,
Dahl designed
you got the best.
the actual bookness of it.
Okay.
So it's like in publishing terms, this is a team thing.
And a team thing that you originated. So did they use your maquette then as the, I mean, how is this constructed? I'm wondering how it goes from your maquette to being this mass-produced book.
Yeah, that was a long process
Yeah.
involving Chinese New Year and then COVID,
Oh yeah.
because this all starts just before COVID. So they sent my book to the printer in China to get a workup of how much they thought it would cost,
They
how
sent
much they thought.
your little pamphlet. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, please don't lose it.
Yeah.
It got there just before the start of Chinese New Year. So everything shuts down for a month.
Okay.
Okay. And then right after Chinese New Year, COVID hits.
Yeah.
So everything shuts down basically for a year,
Yeah.
practically. But after all that, blah, 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 they work up a model of what they think the book is going to be like. And then I have to learn how to color with dots. But this company called Retro Supply
Yeah, I work with their
does,
stuff too. Yeah.
yeah, no, they're fantastic.
Fantastic. Love them. Yep.
Yeah, and they're very reasonable when you need to get a professional license, because up to like 500 copies, you don't need the your standard license when you buy something, it covers you. But this was going to be more than 500 copies, so you had to get the professional license. But they were super cool about the whole thing. So I can't say enough good things about them. I just had to learn how to do all the different stuff. So and I had some health things. My parents had some health things doing out. So everything took a little longer than it was a lot longer than it was going to. But basically, we had to figure out the right size of it. So I scaled everything up, and I did all the coloring myself. Then we had to figure out how to do the cut lines, and so I had to actually thicken all of Schultz's lines on one side, so
Where did
that
you cut?
for the cut, so that we wouldn't get any white around
Right.
it. They didn't want any white like that.
Sure.
Then it got brought. It actually got expanded a little bit even after I was done with the whole thing. But that means that the next book, because this is a series,
Oh, you're doing a series. Wow.
yeah, which is,
Oh my
yeah,
gosh.
ha
Incredible.
talk about happy accidents. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next ones will be even easier because now we've figured out all the dimensions and things like that. So you say the coloring is all me. So basically, I just give them the files. Yeah, I give them the CMYK files, and then Everything gets printed and then it gets hand put together, because the pops, at least, there's no way a machine can do that. There's only two pops, but the because of the way that it's the way that they're put together, there's
When you mean pop, you're talking about the
the
balloon.
thing that actually pops up. There's no way that that can be
That has to,
done by a machine. Those are always done by hand.
so
So
it's tipped in
any
by hand.
pop-up book
Wow.
is popped in by hand.
Wow.
I'm
Incredible.
not sure exactly how they how the layers themselves get done, but I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of it is done. Another thing that Sean did was that was really nice on the book. Like as you hold it, there's that little crease that runs down the side
Yes.
of each page like that
Yes.
to help it. So because like on the original. On the ones that I do, like it
It opens up.
opens, it's open all the way to the very
Yeah,
edge there.
right.
This holds it together, so it's a really sturdy thing.
Yes, it feels sturdy. Yeah.
They just did such a good job with it. I'm so happy with it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It really is in so many, it's just gorgeous. And it does feel like an object that will hold
And
this
I
building.
also feel like. If you are Ignatz and you see crazy, this is your brick.
Yeah, right.
You can just whack this.
So you're saying this is a series. How many of them are there going to be?
Well, that's a good question. I suppose part of it depends on how well they sell, but we already know the next two.
Okay. You chose work them out already?
We know what they are. We know what the strips are.
Oh, okay.
We haven't made them. They haven't been made yet.
Are they from later on in
They kind of have to be because again, let's put it this way: we're not making a Shermie book.
the Now that would
No,
be something.
no one's gonna buy a Shermie book.
Oh,
And
geez,
like
I might.
you, well,
I would be
man.
interested in that. That would be something to see, a Shermie book.
Well, if we make it up to like 40 or 50 books, maybe we can get a Shermie out of there. But like you can't do the first Linus because
Yeah.
the first the I mean or the first Lucy because they start off as number one, they start off as babies.
Yeah.
And so they're not really recognizable. And the first Linus, he's nailed he's sitting there nailed so he can sit up. It
Oh, yeah.
looks really cruel. It looks really cruel.
Somehow in the 50s, it didn't seem quite so.
Yeah, but
World was
now
a
it looks a
different
little
place.
cruel. And also we need to balance because this one's pretty dark. I guess when Charlie the editor was pitching this, they were like, "Does it have to be this strip? This is really dark."
Well,
And he's like, "Man, you don't understand. This is where it all comes from."
You know what I have to say about that is, so much of the merchandise from Peanuts is this sentimental stuff, like love is, happiness is a warm puppy, that kind of thing, which I always felt was, sort of incidental to the strip, that the strip was a much, much thornier
Oh
world
yeah. Oh no.
than that merchandise ever portrayed.
Yeah, no, when I was a kid, the strips that I remember, like there's one where Charlie Brown, I think he's talking to Lucy. I'm not sure if this is one where she's in the psychiatrist booth or not, but he's saying that he wants to run away and go live somewhere else where people don't know that he's Charlie Brown and he can be a different person. She's like, "You're always going to be Charlie Brown. It doesn't matter. You're still you. That's not going to change." And as a kid, I was like, because I identified a lot with Charlie Brown. I was like, "Wow, that's rough. That's a rough thing to hear when you're that young.
You're always going to be you.
Doesn't you're always going to be you? Damn." Or just the feeling of like, or another one that I liked, it isn't as sad, but just like The one where they're lying on their backs looking at the clouds, and Linus is pointing out the,
Oh,
you see the
yeah.
Apostle Paul over there
I
to the
love that.
side,
Yeah.
and Charlie says, I was going to say I saw a ducky and a horsey, but I changed my mind.
Yeah, I love that one.
Right?
Oh my gosh, I love that story.
That one's just hilarious. And it's
Oh,
just
it
this
is.
feeling of my childhood, my own imagination is so inadequate.
I think there's part of everyone, I think, who identifies with Charlie Brown, that we've all been trod upon, at one point or another, and we all
Oh,
feel
yeah.
insecure at times, and there's always the unattainable dream, whether it's winning a baseball game or, and you rem I don't know, I had, it's terrible. There's this memory I have, and I must have been 4 years old, maybe. I don't know, because I was just making friends in this new neighborhood we'd moved into, and I remember standing there. And we were playing wiffle ball in one of my new friends' backyards, and I was waiting to bat. And of course, I'm only like 4 years old, right? So I don't know baseball. I don't know how to play wiffle. I've never done this before. I don't even know how to hold a bat. And of course, I strike out, and everybody's calling me Charlie Brown. Everybody was calling me Charlie Brown, and it was, for a while there, as a matter of fact. They would, in other circumstances, I was still referred to as Charlie Brown. It didn't last more than, a little while, but it was long enough to scar me for, for a long time. I still have that memory.
I don't have memory as much, but when I was very little, it took me a long time to really develop any hair on the top of my head. So I guess the first place or two that my parents lived, the neighbors would call me Charlie Brown because I was just a little bald kid.
Well,
So and so mom
and
continued to call me Charlie Brown. Yeah. Full
don't
circle.
know. Full circle, exactly. No getting away from it, man. Oh, that's incredible. But I think we have that capacity, right, within us. And
Oh yeah, I was gonna say I don't think anybody, if anybody really feels like they're 100% in control of themselves and 100% sure of themselves the whole time, they're a psychopath.
Or sociopath.
If you don't feel, yeah, so if you don't feel a little Charlie Brown, I think there's something that I'm a little scared of.
I hear you. Well, I think also each of the characters, the iconic characters, there's a little bit of all of them in us, and I
Oh,
think
yeah.
it's partly why we can relate and find Lucy's cruelty towards Charlie Brown, well, sometimes we can find it very funny. And, part of that, we take delight in it, or we take delight in Schultz's, wit, or Lucy's wit, or whatever. But there are times when we can relate to that. There's times because we've all probably at one point or another been cruel, and especially as children, right? Children,
Or
people.
she feels she's justified.
Yeah, or she feels.
She's justified. She and I've certainly felt justifiable anger in my
Sure.
life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Damn it, recognize me. I've got this right.
Yeah, exactly. Or,
Why not?
Linus, I always, because I wore glasses, I always related to Linus, and Linus's love, Linus's thoughtfulness was something that I was always attracted to, that was an idea
Oh,
that I enjoyed, because I loved reading and I loved learning when I was a kid. And I always felt like Linus was the character I related to, the most, or the one where I found myself reflected the most was in Linus.
lucky
Because,
you. I would have liked to have.
yeah, Linus is a great character, and but his insecurity's there too. He's walking around with this blanket,
Oh,
his
yeah.
wife, and he professes security, professes a certain kind of authority in his thoughtfulness, but underlying it all, he's got to hold on to something, otherwise that makes him feel safe. Otherwise he's lost. And that's not so far from Charlie Brown,
True. Yeah. No, it's all good. And
Yeah.
Marsh, I like Marcy a lot too, because she's got she she's She's a follower, but she also has a brain of her own.
Oh, yeah.
She's
Yeah.
a lot more independent than she lets on. I think in her followerness, she's also leading a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's an interesting relationship. Marcy and Peppermint Patty, leader follower. She's sort of like the what the if he is the king there, she's the characters I'm
She's
forgetting.
not exactly Iago, but
Yeah. Exactly, not exactly. But yeah, it's that kind of relationship. And she is at the same time she recognizes Peppermint Patty's foibles and frailty,
Yeah.
still goes along, still follows along. I suppose because she finds the trip interesting, that's a reason.
This is backcountry, Marcy.
Do you have any idea? Well, the book has just come out, right? It just came out. Is
It comes out on Tuesday.
on Tuesday. It comes out on Tuesday. So I'm wishing you the most success with this. And I hope that listeners will search this out because this is a wonderful, wonderful item for anybody who is a Peanuts fan. It's a wonderful addition to your
Thank you.
collection. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's such a tribute, really. Beautiful too. So Gene, there must be then a career in pop-up books for you. Aside from doing more Peanuts work, is that Ditko book ever going to see the light of day in published form or other books? Do you have other ideas?
I've had thoughts. I don't
Mm-hmm.
know about the Ditko book. That would well, Abrams works with Marvel. I don't know. I should show it to Charlie. We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it has quite the
Well, peanuts,
quite the thing. Yeah,
Yeah, I mean
peanuts is a thing.
yeah.
But I'm certainly I've started working on some other things. I've started working on I did a quick thing to try to take something that looks like one of my comics panels and make it a pop-up, which is nuts.
Yeah, because your abstract comics are.
Yeah, so I did this thing of just like all interlocking forms
Well, that
that
would be interesting. Yeah.
just looks like that looks like one of my panels. But I did it real quick. I've got a bunch of how-to books that I need to deal with more because I've got a huge pop-up book library myself. I love pop-up books.
Oh, yeah, they're fun.
I have so many of them. But I need to work more. That's one of my goals this weekend is to just try to make a couple small things just to work on some other ideas. Because yeah, I would love to do more pop-uppy things. Because this Peanuts thing, it's again, there's only two real pops in it, but it's the depth I think that really is
Oh,
what I was
yeah.
really trying to do with this book is trying to show that with just a few lines, Schultz is creating this world.
Yes.
So with the three layers in each panel, you're getting this kind of depth. And
Yeah.
that's one of the choices with choosing other strips too. You've got to have at least two characters going usually
Right.
because you need enough elements to be able to show these layers of depth
Right.
also.
Right. And that's what makes a pop-up book interesting is the idea of depth. That
Yeah.
what was flat and two-dimensional has opened up and that space has opened up, it's telescoped.
Yeah, my favorite 3D movies are the ones that play with depth more so than the ones that jump out at you.
Yeah. That's an interesting idea, and I think that that's what is it? It really is fundamental to our experience of pop-up books. The idea that the frame that's here, is a window, right? And
Yeah,
we,
that's really what I'm doing.
yeah, it's a window that we see into, right? And then when what's exciting is that moment, where something pops out of that window, and it's
Yeah.
reality, and I can't get this. There it is. It's somewhere like that.
Yeah.
That's part of it's playing around with the idea of illusionistic space and making that illusionistic space tangible. Yeah.
Thank you. That's pretty much exactly what I was trying to do.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, it's wonderful. So the Ditko book gives you that opportunity too, because all those backgrounds are so illusionistic, so dimensional. And
oh yeah, that's I mean, that, I that, and that's why I wanted no people in that book. I wanted no word balloons.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to look at the way that Ditko is using and portraying space.
Beautiful book.
Spaces.
Yeah. Yeah, because
and that story was the ultimate one to do it with.
Sure, and his language, his visual language of those spaces has become so iconic. It's hard, you know. It's derived in ways from surrealism, but then, you know, he takes it and turns it into something else, and that's so much his.
His mysticism is tangible in a way that other people try to make it ethereal.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very much. Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see, though, where it really is an interesting thought to think about where you might go, how you might expand this, because, you know, you've had this success. And of course, because this is so expensive to produce, Peanuts is the kind of thing where the publisher's going to recoup their investment. That's pretty clear. But because Peanuts merchandise is big time, but it would be interesting to see, you know, where you might go next with this idea, you know, aside from not only playing with the space of your own work and turning those into pop-ups, but also you know, thinking about, you know, I'm just thinking about what a great, you know, Crazy Cat would be great, you know, as a pop-up book, or, you know, so many other interesting. It's funny, when I think of it, I was like, I don't think I'd like to see, you know, Prince Valiant that way. I'm not sure. You know, Foster, when you start thinking about representational, realistic, you know, naturalistic cartooning or illustration, somehow or another, that seems a little too, I don't know. They're so intent on creating the idea of space, this idea of minimalist space that you've taken and expand it. You know, you've taken what's hinted at and expanded it. That seems so much more fulfilling in a way.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, something to chew over. I don't know if it makes much sense upon reflection.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
But, you know, there's something about the idea that, you know, Schultz is implying space, and you've taken it and made it tangible. You're saying this is what Schultz implies with very little line work, you know, very little. It's just enough to create a whole world. Whereas, you know, Hal Foster goes to these extreme lengths of detail, you know, in creating that world. He does all the work for you.
Yeah.
So you don't need to telescope it, because he does that in the illustration, you know. I mean, he's a very sophisticated illustrator. His line weight is such and blah, blah, blah. You know, there's all these aspects of his illustration that make it really do all that work in the illustration. You know, does it need to be a pop-up book? It probably doesn't. But or would that expand on the ideas that are implied in the artwork? This sort of, you know, explodes the idea in the artwork, because it is all through implication rather than illustration or explication, you know?
Man, now you got me thinking. That's dangerous.
Well, you know, it's. I was just thinking of the next thing I could see you doing Seeger, you know. I could see you doing Harriman. I could see you doing a variety.
Harriman would be a lot of fun.
Harriman would be a lot of fun, I think. Yeah, you know, and if Abrams, which is a really huge publisher, doesn't see the benefit of it, other smaller publishers may. I don't know. You know.
We'll see.
Just
but
throwing
I do,
it
I
out
do,
there, man.
Yeah, I know. But I do want to kind of think about some of my own stuff too.
Oh yeah, sure. Yep, absolutely. Oh no, you know, and that would be interesting too. Think about how, when you talk about your abstract work and the complexity that's inherent and the ambiguity that's inherent in abstract work, you know, how you might play with that. In a way, you start to do that in the Ditko book. And it's kind of a natural evolution in a way, you know, to think of it that way.
Yeah. 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 Getting ambiguous in 3D is,
yeah.
in tangible 3D is kind of a weird thing. Yeah,
Yeah.
like visual 3D, because I also love like 3D glasses type 3D
Oh yeah.
as opposed to pop-up 3D.
Yeah.
And you can do ambiguity visual 3D a lot easier than you can tangible 3D.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there are some books that do both.
You
Man,
have favorite?
stop it, brain.
Do you have favorite pop-up books? Before we close our interviewer, do you have any favorite pop-up books that you
Oh.
might point people to?
Well, there's a lot. I have a sentimental attachment to Robert Sabuda's Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, okay.
Just because it's one of the first when I really started to get into pop-up books, because it does so many cool things. It's one of the first that I saw where they were really going into doing multiple things on a single page, like when Alice falls down the rabbit hole, you actually pull up a little tiny
Oh.
like periscope thing to see her fall down. And the near the end, when she says, "Oh, you're all a pack of cards," when you turn that page, it just kind of explodes
Oh,
up.
wonderful. Wow.
I'm really waiting. There's a press called Popposition Press, which specializes in pop-up books. They did a Warhol book that was
Oh,
really
cool.
good, but their Keith Haring book is coming out anytime now. And I've seen a mock-up of that, and that looks like it's going to be really, really incredible.
Oh, wow. What's the name of the company?
Popposition Press.
Popposition Press. Okay. I'm going to have to look
They've
that up.
done, they've, yeah, they've done a lot of really, really cool stuff.
Oh, wonderful.
And they do greeting cards and stuff like that too. I've got a book that's all in Chinese. It opens out to about 8 feet long. It's The Hidden City, and it's just unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
It's
Incredible.
unbel yeah, because I've got other ones like Star Wars that opens up that represents all nine movies, and I don't have there's not even a table at work big enough to hold the whole thing.
You ought to
It's the
do,
size of a book, but
You ought to do
when you open
videos of
it up,
your collection, man. That would
oh
be so
man,
cool.
it's ridiculous. And I've got a handful of the Hallmark did some Peanuts pop-up books in the 70s and things like that. I've got some Tintin pop-up books. I
Oh my gosh.
don't I have so many outer
Oh,
space pop-up books.
please do a collection
Yeah,
video. Do just like 2 minutes. Okay, this is, the Alice in Wonderland book or Warhol book or whatever it is you have. It'd be so
the
cool, man.
Large Hadron Collider got the pop-up book.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, Gene, this has been great. Wonderful to talk to you and catch up again. And I'm so pleased. I love this book and I'm so pleased for you. I really am. It's such a wonderful, wonderful, happy event for everybody who's a Peanuts fan, and for Gene Cannenberg, who's such a wonderful guy. And
Thank you so much, Jeff.
yeah, it's great,
Really
man.
appreciate that.
Oh yeah, it's great. And I just love it. And I hope it sells a million. I really do.
I hope so too.
Yeah, and I hope you go on to make a bunch more. I'm looking forward to all of them. So, excellent. Well, Gene, I've got to run, so it's just been great and it's been wonderful to connect again.
Definitely great to connect with you again too.
Yeah. All right. Take care, man.
Thanks for the invite.
So that's our discussion with Gene Cannenberg. I hope you've enjoyed both sets of discussions. If you haven't, make sure you check out my discussion with Gene about the Herskovitz Library of African Studies at Northwestern University and all about Northwestern and Northwestern's collection of comics, their collection of African ephemera and printed matter, and everything else under the sun. So be sure to head over, and if you haven't listened to it yet, you don't want to miss this discussion with Gene, right? This wonderful talk about all of the resources at Northwestern University that I did not know existed. I know Those of us who are familiar with the Billy Ireland Museum and know about Ohio State and Ohio State's great collection of comics, well, this is another great resource, Northwestern University. Be sure to listen to that, okay? Well, I hope you enjoyed this discussion, and I hope that you will go right out and pick up Here Comes Charlie Brown, A Peanuts Pop-Up, because it's a great book. It's a wonderful subject. Anybody who loves Peanuts, any family member who loves Peanuts, this is a wonderful addition to a Peanuts collection. It's a wonderful item to display on your coffee table or wherever else. The Peanuts Pop-Up book certainly belongs in that class. So head on over to wherever you get your books and get a copy of this today. You will not be disappointed. And it is sure to be a collector's item. It is going to be the first in a series. So that's wonderful news. And again, you know, wonderful, wonderful talk with Gene. It's great to have him here. So, as I've said before, right now, if you join us on Patreon, join Blockhead at Patreon at patreon.com/Jeff Grogan. That's GEOFFGROGAN. Between now and June 1st, if you join at the paid level, you will receive a free copy, signed copy of my brand new, as I said, magnum opus, this great work of literature, comics literature, Donut and the Cheeseburger, Race for the White House 2024. It is a tabloid newspaper, full-color comics, 20 pages of full-color comics all about the politics of the day. And one of the most important elections of our lifetime, if not the most important election of our lifetime. So again, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/Jeff Grogan. Between now and June 1st at the paid level, receive a free copy of that, and it is limited. So do it now. Do it quickly before they all run out. And, you know, then where will we be? So be sure to do that. You don't want to miss it. And who knows, I may throw something else in there, you know, as an extra gift for your generosity and your support. That'll do it for now. My name's Jeff Grogan, and I'll be saying so long and see you later. I hope you will pop in again in a couple of weeks for our next episode. This time, right now, I've got a couple of people lined up, but I'm not sure who's coming up first. So you'll have to wait and see. It's a mystery guest, and look forward to that, okay? And I'll look forward to you joining us again next time on the next episode of Blockhead. So until then, be well, be safe, be happy, pick up your Peanuts pop-up book, and thanks for listening.